From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
G'day, g'day. Welcome to the program. It is good to have your company as we bring you our program from Sydney, Australia for the next 2 hours. We're up at 4 p.m., which is daylight saving time on the east coast of Australia. It is Tuesday, March 19th. It is actually Chocolate and Caramel Day. Now, far be it from me to, you know, compel you to go and find yourself a fix of chocolate and caramel, but it's that time of the afternoon. And if it's nighttime where you are, it's that time of the night. And if it's morning where you are, it's just that time of the morning. So chocolate and caramel, do your best. In this edition, the hypocrisy of mainstream media. Never is journalism twisted into activism more than prior to an election campaign. I've seen it time and time again over many, many decades. And in the United States this week, the activists have been exposed. I'll present a little bit of a forensic analysis of how the word bloodbath was used and abused by these media clowns. And they think we can't see what they're doing. Well, we'll expose it very shortly. My special guest today is a man who's made gauging the mood of the people his lifetime passion and pursuit. Lawrence Pace is the founder and CEO of For My Say. It's a social polling app. There aren't too many of these in the world. A social polling app, which uses large sample sizes to make conclusions about what we think, what we believe in, and who we support, including political stances. In fact, his latest polls tell us so much about which news sources the public trusts and distrusts. I'll get to that specific poll with Lawrence very shortly, but he will be on the program today. New South Wales Independent MLC Mark Latham is on deck. Got a stack to talk about. We've got this most bizarre anti-American comment, which has come out of the mouth of a minister related to the federal Labor government. It's one of the weirdest things I've heard in decades. And bad news for religious-based schools. There are plans afoot in terms of reforms to religious discrimination that have been put on the back burner. We'll try and fathom where that is up to, because as you remember, Scott Morrison tried to get these over the line when he was Prime Minister. We'll talk about the big beat up about power price reductions. When you see power price reductions, you instantly think, well, someone's got to be doing something good. Maybe it's the government. Maybe they're doing something good. Got nothing to do with the government. And I doubt whether you will see a reduction. And bear in mind, in the last 2 years in Australia, there has been an increase, a general average increase in power prices to the tune of 20%. You're never going to get that back. Never. And we'll also talk about the nauseating crimes committed by the social media giants. All of that with Mark Latham. And the Australian economy, are we on the brink of a turnaround? Now, maybe not very quickly, but today's interest rates decision to keep them steady is, according to some economists, a little bit of a crossroad. The fact that there could be downward pressure on interest rates next time they meet the Reserve Bank. Economist Dr. Natalia Iloshina will give us her take on all of this. We'll also discuss this idea of a four-day working week. The Democrat Bernie Sanders has suggested this during the week. It's got one major flaw to it, though, and we'll talk to Natalia about that flaw. And why investment in renewables in Australia has dropped by a massive 80%. Why do you think that is the case? And this is the industry, of course, the Australian Labor government is pinning all our hopes on. We'll talk to Natalia a little bit later. Don't forget, we have our talkback lines as well, which is a pretty good opportunity for you to have your say. We don't bite. There's no ceiling on opinion. And so you can jump on those talkback lines from the United States or Canada on 1-888-201-6422. 0123 0025. From the UK, 0033 0024 1026. And from Australia or New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. Write the numbers down, put them on a post-it note and stick them on the fridge maybe, or just in your smartphone. That would be ideal. We'll be taking your calls as soon as you dial through. You won't have to wait. You're with Chris Smith. We're broadcasting live on the Global News Talk Network, TNT.
Talk that matters.
For once, we just need to do what's best for this damn country and not what's best for the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, I'm about to shine the light on mainstream media hypocrisy. And it's even worse than that, really. It's not just about hypocrisy. It's left-wing activism dressed up as unbiased news reporting. That's what it is. They're trying to show that they're unbiased, trying to show that they're somehow independent. They're not independent at all. This example today comes from the United States. But if you think the same kind of journalistic deception doesn't happen in your city, whether it's in the UK, Australia, New Zealand, or anywhere else, you are not paying attention. Start paying attention. I've got a few video clips to play for you here, which is the very best way to illustrate what has transpired in the US this week. First, Donald Trump used the word bloodbath to describe what will happen in America if he fails to win the presidential election in November. So you can just imagine, as soon as he uses that word, the B word, they go straight for the jugular. They're just waiting for any opportunity to go for Donald's jugular. This is what most of the mainstream media played in their regular news bulletins.
Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole... That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country.
Ooh. Does it sound violent? Well, it sounds violent when you just play that seven-second snippet. But many of the news organizations only played that seven-second snippet. That's all they ran, which has all kinds of frightening connotations. And that is the point. To make Trump look bad, to make him look like some kind of violent, bloody madman. And so that's what they did. Now, if you don't believe me, if you don't think that they construed what Trump said in a violent manner, well, listen to this panel on MSNBC.
He loves to mush a lot of stuff in what he says, and then his campaign says, oh, he was only joking, or... oh, it was taken out of context. He wasn't talking about violence in the country. I call BS on that. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. That is BS on that. He was definitely sending a call to his supporters to have a reprise of January 6th, but even worse, because he is calling, when he says bloodbath, that means more of the weapons that we saw on January 6th.
Didn't you believe that? Not just a call to violence, not just a secret code to his MAGA fans, but a call to bear arms if he loses. Take up your arms. That's what they actually think. You saw it for yourself. And that's just one news outlet. That's what Trump is all about. They tell their audience. Violence. In fact, one left-wing activist disguised as a journalist, Keith Olbermann, hoped that Trump would be killed after he said bloodbath. Now, he posted this on social media, quote, Trump says he's been treated worse than Abraham Lincoln, who was assassinated. There's always the hope. There's always the hope of someone assassinating Donald Trump. Now, I know who's inciting violence here. It's not Trump. It's this lefty activist, Olbermann. That is a classic example of inciting violence. Where's the FBI charging this creep? Elon Musk shared a post saying that the media is lying about Donald Trump with this narrative about a bloodbath if he loses the election, captioning it with legacy media lies. So Elon Musk is on the same page here. In fact, if you listen to what the former president said in context, not the 7 seconds they played, there's only one interpretation of the bloodbath. and it's got nothing to do with violence or weapons.
Let me tell you something to China. If you're listening, President Xi, and you and I are friends, but he understands the way I deal, those big monster car manufacturing plants that you're building in Mexico right now, and you think you're going to get that, you're going to not hire Americans, and you're going to sell the cars to us now, we're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole, that's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country.
There it is. In context, there it is. An economic bloodbath for the American car industry. Have I got that wrong? I don't think so. And a bloodbath for America economically. One of the obvious definitions of the word bloodbath is, quote, a period of disastrous loss or reversal. Example, a few mutual funds performed well in the general bloodbath of the stock market. A bloodbath in the stock market is a regular term. Trump is an investor. He's a property tycoon. He would speak in terms of economic bloodbaths regularly. But the mainstream media decided to resort to lies, exaggeration, distortion, because Biden is in electoral trouble and Trump is drawing further away each week. Now, if that wasn't hypocritical enough, this is how the mainstream media uses the word bloodbath themselves outside of this week.
But as Politico.com reports tonight on the, quote, bloodbath at the RNC,
headlines calling it a, quote, bloodbath.
Be a bloodbath. Not only is it going to be a bloodbath, but after they leave New Hampshire, it's a bloodbath on her home turf. That's really tough.
And Trump has left a lot of corpses in his wake. I mean, we can count the bodies.
As part of the, quote, MAGA drive to take over Maricopa County. And the headline refers to it as an impending bloodbath.
Columnist Charles Blow has a new piece for the New York Times entitled A Biden Bloodbath.
2018 midterms, you can bet that they 100% are fearing a slaughter. In fact, the word bloodbath and massacre come up frequently.
The Republican Party will be destroyed. It's going to be a bloodbath.
There's going to be a bloodbath one way or the other.
Bloodbath for Bernie Sanders.
It's been a bloodbath. They're shaping up to be a bloodbath.
Head off a bloodbath in next year's crucial midterm.
Off-year elections are often a bloodbath.
This week's bloodbath for Democrats.
A bloodbath at the ballot box.
There could be a Republican bloodbath.
They'll talk about a bloodbath.
It's a bloodbath. I have to talk about you.
In other words, it's an overused journalistic term to describe something that has gone terribly wrong. They know it only too well, but they don't want to tell their mainstream audience they know it. They want to have Trump designating the word towards his MAGA supporters so that there is violence and weapons are used. Can you believe this stuff? I don't need to say too much because all the video and audio shows how incriminating it is. The deliberate distortions in mainstream media, they just come thick and fast. And they've been coming thick and fast since the beginning of the year because weaponizing the judiciary has not tripped him up. So the journalistic activists, and that's what they are, they've got to discredit Trump any way they can. We'll keep an eye on them very closely. This is TNT.
TNT's James Freeman.
Now that I'm sitting on the other side of the fence, I see the budget in a very different light. I find the discussions and leaks in the press in the weeks running up to the budget totally patronising. You know, will he, won't he, give us some tax cuts? When the reality is that nothing in the budget will make any material difference to anyone, pretty much. That's usually the story. It is a game of musical chairs where the government giveth with one hand and taketh with the other. And we're all reminded about how little money that we've got left in our pockets.
James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT.
In a democracy, the majority vote rules. But in most democracies, you can only vote for change every 3 or 4 years. To understand what people want, governments and political parties use focus groups. These focus groups can include as little as 20 people. Australia is a country of over 25 million people. Does making decisions based on 20 people sound fair to you? Have your say. Be heard in between elections. Download the For My Say app now. That is number 4, My Say.
I want to say this, and I'm going to say it just once.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I'll get to Mark Latham in just a short time, but I've got someone waiting online right now on our talkback lines. It's Siv. G'day there, Siv.
G'day, Chris. How are you going, mate?
Very well, thank you. What are your thoughts on mainstream media at the moment leading up to November?
Good question. I think you have to take the attitude, given all that stuff about the bloodbath thing, I think you have to take the attitude, just don't trust them. So you might. So for me, for instance, if you hear Donald or reported comments from Donald Trump about, you know, a bloodbath, and then you hear all these outrageous things that they're saying about, well, you know, he's attaching that to his MAGA supporters and all the rest of it, and he's calling for violence. Well, you go and you say, well, I don't know whether he said that. I'll go and look at the speech, or I'll go and find out what he actually said and what the context was. I think now, the more outrageous the claim is, the more people are going to distrust whatever the mainstream is saying. The more extreme, the more shouty. I've kind of said this before in relation to things like climate change. The more shouty and loud you are, the less likely we're going to listen to you, because we know you guys cry wolf, and you cry wolf way too much.
Yeah, and when it's that blatant, when it's that divorced from the real use of the word, you just think to yourself, who are you kidding? How dumb do you think we are?
Exactly. But I think that whole thing about, you know, they're trying to discredit Trump, that's true. But I think that the American people who have a say in this, I think that a huge number of them are actually behind Trump. And the more that he's attacked, this is the ironic thing, these bozos don't get. They are bozos. These people don't get it. The more you attack Trump, the more you shout, the more you scream, the more these supporters are going to just stick with the guy, and the more that they're going to probably get other people onto their side of the argument, because you're just too shouty, you're just too loud, and you're just too stupid. Good to talk to you, Chris.
Good on you, Siv. Thank you very much for your call. Good to have you on the program. I've got the independent MLC in the New South Wales Upper House of Parliament, Mark Latham, on the line. Mark, welcome to TNT.
Thanks, Chris. Always a pleasure.
Good to have you here. Question without notice. I went through a little bit of a forensic examination of the way the word bloodbath was interpreted by some sections of the media. They played a shortened version of it on several of the mainstream media news bulletins that I saw. And then when I saw the extended version, there is no doubt in my mind that you would misconstrue what he was referring to.
Yeah, of course, but it's part of a pattern. Donald Trump himself calls them the fake news media. And you can only agree with him, where there's a huge institutionalized bias against Donald Trump because he's a disruptor. The mainstream media in the United States, those left-wing cable channels, all despise him. They thought they finished him off at the last election. They could never believe that he won in 2016 in the first place. They all had those predictions. It was impossible he could ever win. And they despise his very existence on this planet. So they'll do everything, use every trick, every misrepresentation, every misquoting under the sun to damage his campaign for the election later this year. So it's part of a pattern. You've highlighted clearly what he meant by bloodbath, but as soon as he said that, they thought, how can we twist and turn this into a resurrection of the events of January 6th at the Capitol building and try and damage him further? So when he says fake news media, he says, oh, there's terrible people standing up the back there, we know it's true.
Yeah, I think you summed it up perfectly. And they just lose credibility. And those who are wavering between Trump and others, or what do I vote for, who do I vote for, they are just going to come round to supporting Trump because they see how unfairly, you know, the likes of the mainstream media treat him. But I don't think the penny's dropped yet. The more they do this stuff, the more he increases his support. All right, I want to come down under. The Minister Don Farrell, who tends to get his foot stuck right in his gob, and he's done so again here. He's downgraded the American alliance with Australia. He says New Zealand is our closest international ally. What is the government up to? What are they trying to do? Are they trying to divorce themselves from the United States, and why?
Well, it was a very strange statement in that Farrell was acting foreign minister because Penny Wong is away on her honeymoon, having been married on the weekend. And Farrell was asked a fairly innocuous question and came out with this new foreign policy formula that upgraded New Zealand. It wasn't just the downgrading of the American alliance, it was the upgrading of New Zealand. But where has this come from? Because back in the 1980s, New Zealand dropped out of ANZUS. ANZUS stands for Australia, New Zealand, United States. And they dropped out under a Labor government because they didn't want American nuclear-powered warships and submarines in their ports.
Yeah.
So they ripped up ANZUS and it dropped out the NZ part, so it became AUS, and now we've got AUKUS, which adds the United Kingdom. So in light of that, which hasn't changed over the past 35 years, you'd have to say that New Zealand is a mile behind the Americans in terms of a military alliance with Australia and now the United Kingdom because of AUKUS. So I don't know if he wants to tack the NZ back on, but it's quite delusional. It's not factual. And I'm sure it's raised some eyebrows in Washington and London to say, what's this Australian joker on about? Who would ever think that Australia is looking to New Zealand if we ever needed military assistance? No, we would obviously look to the United States and now the United Kingdom under AUKUS. So a very strange thing to say, and probably a minister not across his brief, not thinking clearly, and quite frankly, looking like a fool.
Foot in mouth again. I can't help but think about the words of Paul Keating in the last few days, agitating about Australia's connection to the United States, showing that he wants to be closer to China, turning up and planning a meeting with Wang Li or being invited to speak with Wang Li. And I just get the feeling I can't divorce the two. Is it just Labor's DNA that they want to divorce themselves from the United States?
Well, I think it's a Paul Keating characteristic in recent times. There's nothing wrong with a former Prime Minister like Paul Keating, who was a big wheel, obviously, in our diplomatic relations, our economic reforms in the 80s and 90s. Nothing wrong with him having a meeting with the visiting Chinese foreign minister, as long as he delivered the sensible message, which is, you know, in Keating-esque style, listen, pal, you are our biggest trading partner with Australia, of course, and we value that, but this relentless Chinese political interference in Australia has got to end. You've got to be a good international citizen. You've got to clean up your act in the
South. As if he's going to say that.
Well, I know, but he could say it, couldn't he? Like, sensibly, he could say it, and it would be an important message to the Chinese. Because, you know, I think Albanese has rebalanced the relationship, and at least ministers from our country can visit China, and now we see Wang Yi coming here to Australia. So that's all healthy. It's better that countries talk to each other than raise the suspicions that come with silence. So there's nothing wrong with Keating having this meeting, but the Prime Minister should be ringing him to say, listen, can you deliver a message that's consistent with Australia's best interests and the message that we've been giving the Chinese? We value the trading relationship, of course. It's important to jobs and prosperity in Australia. But on the political side, it'd be wise for the Chinese to change course.
But you know what he will say? He'll say, I haven't supported the connection with AUKUS, the trilateral agreement they've got with these silly nuclear submarines. They're cretins. They don't know what they're doing. Don't listen to them. That's what he'll say.
Yeah, but it's not meeting with the Chinese foreign minister shouldn't be a meeting that's about the United States and the United Kingdom. It should be a meeting that's about Australia and China.
Yeah.
There's some very important things to say there. So we'll find out what Keating says. I don't think the sky is falling because he's having a meeting with the Chinese foreign minister, but I think it's incumbent upon Albanese to try and use his influence with Paul Keating to say, as one Labor prime minister to a former Labor prime minister, look, can you at least stick to talking about the Australian-Chinese relationship instead of going global and reflecting poorly upon our allies in the United States and the United Kingdom. We'll see how Albo goes, if he's got any influence, or Keating thinks Albo is a joke and tells him to get nicked.
Well, it would put Keating in a corner, but I don't think Albo's got the guts to do it, has he?
Well, he should. He should just pick up the phone. Surely, Keating lobbies everyone apparently in Canberra and tells them what he thinks. Well, what's wrong with the Prime Minister
lobbying
telling
him
Keating what he thinks? You know, like have a go, for goodness sake.
Yeah, have a go. I like that. All right, I want to talk about power bills. We've lost about 20% in value in terms of our power bills. If we were back where we were 2 years ago, it'd be dandy. So much for the $275 that we were told by Anthony Albanese we would get because of the election of the Labor government. We're now hearing that from July 1, majority of Australian consumers will get a reduction in their power bill. But when you consider how much we've lost, like how much we've had to pay more, it's just a wee in the ocean, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because there's been an $830 increase over the past 2 or 3 years.
Wow.
We're not getting that back. We're getting 7% reduction, say, for Endeavour Energy that covers where I live in Western Sydney and other parts of New South Wales. So that's typical of the decrease, 7%. But you've got to understand, Chris, where it's coming from. You know, there's a decrease that could come from a lower cost base, which has been the claim of renewable energy. The decrease is not coming from that. It's coming from the Australian Energy Regulator putting a squeeze on the retail profits.
Yeah.
And the retailers have been making mega profits, and the regulator is saying, now, hang on, you can afford to pass on a saving here by trimming up your profit margins. So to some extent, it's a one-off decrease. It's not coming because of the promise of renewables bringing down costs.
Mm.
It's coming because of a trimming of the profit margins as ordered by the regulator. But also, you know, there's an element of illusion about this because it doesn't factor in the cost to taxpayers. $20 or $30 billion, some people say $50 billion to wire up the new transmission grid for renewables. Taxpayers fund that. And the other one is, you know, the backup power. Look at Snowy 2.0. The big white elephant will probably cost $20 billion. So we're all funding it one way or another, if not as consumers, then as taxpayers. So don't get too excited about a one-off decrease.
No, don't get too excited. And I noticed when I had a look at the Australian Financial Review this morning, there's a story, and I haven't read it, but I have seen the headline, Coal Needed. Energy CEOs warn that the transition is falling behind. You've said it, I've said it, so many people have said it. This was never going to work out.
No, the mad rush to renewables was never feasible. It was always going to lead to higher prices in the long term and the threat of blackouts, and the situation doesn't get any better. In fact, there's a rising revolt along the seaside about so-called offshore wind power, the wind towers out there in the ocean, and there's certainly a revolt in country New South Wales about the loss of prime agricultural land to wind and solar farms and the big transmission corridors that wreck the landscape. So, and of course, the delay in projects like Snowy 2.0, which is essential for the backup power when the sun's not shining and the wind's not blowing.
Yeah, spot on. Got to take a break for news. I'll come back in just a second. Let's go there now on TNT.
The conversation continues.
You guys are awful positive today for what we're witnessing. It's that division that they want to push.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Russian President Vladimir Putin has scorned Washington for weaponizing its Justice Department against its presidential candidates. The US now says it wants to hold urgent talks with Russia and China on a new nuclear arms control agreement. And the UN is warning of imminent famine in Gaza, where it says more than 1 million people have completely exhausted their food supplies and are now suffering from catastrophic levels of hunger.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk. TNT Radio. TNT Radio.
Thank you to Jason for an email just through wanting to discuss or at least comment on what I had to say at the beginning about mainstream media. Jason says, I said that yesterday. MSM is a bloody disgrace. That's Jason's view. Let's go back to Mark Latham. Mark, Federal Labor is preparing to shelve a controversial change to religious discrimination law unless it gains a guarantee of bipartisan support from the opposition. There's so much. First of all, there's the policy itself I'd like to talk about, but then there's this strategy that Anthony Albanese has somehow adopted where he wants the opposition to save his backside. So there are two issues here. Just explain to my viewers and listeners exactly what this is about. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's about religious schools hiring teachers and whether they should be allowed to legally discriminate, right?
Yes, for 40 years or so in Australia, religious schools, non-government schools, have had exemptions from the Sex Discrimination Act in Canberra, and here in New South Wales, where I serve, the Anti-Discrimination Act. Now, there's no point being a religious school if you can't be religious. You see, there's an obvious common sense proposition here that these human rights statutes would require you as a school not to hire on the basis of someone's capacity to fit in with the school values about religion, just sort of ignore that, and also what you can teach in the classroom, which also involves religious values. So they've had this exemption for the common sense reason that non-government schools want to be able to hire on the grounds of religious values and belief and also teach that in the classroom. So there's not much point being a school like that if you're not allowed to have those characteristics and do those things in the everyday management of the school. Now, the other point is, of course, that the lefties who always want to end these exemptions can never point to any form of discrimination.
No.
They can't, anyone who's been rubbed out or something unacceptable happening. These schools are very tolerant and accepting of students who might come up with a contrary point of view. So there's no big problem to be solved here. It's left-wing dogma to end these exemptions, and it will damage non-government schools that are very popular. Yeah, the parents who can pay the fees, and a lot of it is low-fee schools in working-class areas like Western Sydney, these schools are Christian and also Islamic, have become very, very popular.
Yeah.
So the parents are voting with their feet and their wallet and want to go to these schools, and for the school and also Islamic have become very, very popular.
Yeah.
So the parents are voting with their feet and their wallet and want to go to these schools, and for the schools to lose their exemptions will damage them and end the way in which parents can get their kids into schools where they like the values, they like the teaching, they like the style and ethos of the school. Well, why change a winning formula? That's the ridiculous thing. Why change a winning formula when there's no identifiable problem that anyone can point to?
Yeah, if you had a lawsuit, for instance, made up of 100 people who've been badly discriminated against because they desperately wanted to go and teach in a Catholic school, we might have a debate to have. But the whole thing works in practice, Mark. And as a Catholic school student myself, and I had a lot to do with the teachers after I left the school, we had gay students, we had gay teachers. Everyone knew who was gay. The school didn't mind who was working. But what we did have is a religious adherence by all the teachers, because there's so much intertwining, whether you're on excursion, whether you're at camp, whether you're in school, or whether it's a special feast day. There's an interweaving between what a teacher has to teach and what religious service is going on that particular day.
Yeah, exactly. The religious ethos is very important, and there's no point teaching in a religious school if you're viciously anti-religion.
Yeah.
You know, that you don't fit in, you shouldn't have applied. But the whole point of ending these exemptions is to open up what we call lawfare, that the government-funded left-wing activist groups will basically say to any gay person, oh, you missed out on recruitment at a certain school. Mightn't have been, probably, it wouldn't have been because they were gay. It would have been they just weren't the best candidate in their academic and other credentials. But they'll say to that failed applicant, you've been discriminated.
Let's sue the school.
Let us help you fund a challenge through the human rights tribunals and get compensation for something that didn't happen. They weren't rubbed out because of their sexuality. They just missed out because they weren't the best qualified person.
Yeah.
But the activists will want to fund that as a compensation claim, and that's what this proposed ending of the exemptions is all about.
So let's talk about the strategy. Anthony Albanese obviously thinks that the opposition is part of the government. He doesn't want to have division over this issue, so he wants the opposition to be on board. But the opposition doesn't have the numbers, so I don't understand. Has he become a little bit gun-shy, do you think?
Well, he's looking for air cover. He's looking for someone to blame if it all goes wrong when the lawfare starts and these cases are run through the tribunal. Oh, no, this is bipartisanship. The opposition supported this. Don't just blame the Labor Party. So that's the trick he's trying to pull. And the Liberal and National parties would be very foolish indeed if they fell for that trick. They should say, look, for 40 years, the existing system has worked well. How do we know that? These schools are flourishing. They're the fastest growing part of the Australian school education system.
Mm.
So why change the winning formula?
Yeah. Well said. You know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. What's broken? Show me the evidence. What's broken? Nothing's broken. And so interesting about lawfare. You know, you just know that the lawyers are on the side here. The lawyers attached to the advocates of LGBTQ thinking, oh, this is our next frontier. This is the next big number. And we'll take our own our own percentage of these big victories as well in court. And they might have these victories, but they'll only have them if this particular group of reforms are passed by the government. You can just see it happening a mile off. And you've nailed it. Leave it alone. If it's not broke, Don't try and fix it. Now, Julie Inman, Australia's e-safety commissioner. Now, I haven't had too much good to say about Julie Inman because I think she's sticking her nose in places that where she shouldn't. But she now says the big tech firms are enabling the most nauseating crimes imaginable on a scale never seen in human history. What are your thoughts on Julie Inman's take on social media?
Well, I think the Holocaust might have been a bit worse than what she's saying in terms of a judgment about human history. So she's guilty of hyperbole to start with and a misunderstanding of history. But I think you'll find with Julie Inman Grant, the e-safety commissioner, Chris, there's a little bit of politics being played because she seems to have a much bigger concern about right-wing activity on the internet and all these different platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Reddit, Telegram and the like, than perhaps the bigger concern about Antifa, this vicious, violent left-wing mob. I haven't heard her condemn Antifa nor radical Islamic terrorism, which remains an issue, according to the head of our security agencies recently. He said, let's not forget the danger of radical Islamic terrorism in Australia, and we're on a higher alert. So I think she needs to go straight down the middle politically and also recognise that, you know, there's an element of freedom here. Good, discerning, sensible citizens don't spend all day on violent extremist websites. How many bureaucrats do we need? How much government money do we need to close all these things down when you can rely much more sensibly on the common sense of the public? Not to use these things. And for parents, I think most particularly, to be very careful. Parents have learnt this over the years, the age of the internet. Monitor what your children are doing. Be careful about it. And don't let them go down the rabbit hole of either left or right-wing extremism. Now, if they're going to use the internet, use it for the productive purposes of schoolwork and a little bit of sensible entertainment rather than, you know, deep-seated political views.
I just get the feeling from reading the story that she's very keen on getting some kind of legislation, something that would censor social media, when what she really should be doing is having some kind of education campaign so that parents are aware of what their children are exposed to on certain sections of social media. That would be far more constructive.
Yeah, we don't want government-controlled information in Australia. We want to rely on the good sense of the Australian people to know what they should regard as just rubbish. Also, parents to monitor what their children are doing, have sensible precautions against extremist and violent content in the home and elsewhere. So, yeah, I don't think Julie Inman Grant needs to be our mother protector on this. But, yeah, like all bureaucrats running these tin pot agencies that pop out of nowhere, they want more and more power. And if we give it to her, I think that'll be counterproductive.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, so in a related form, what do we do with TikTok? Do we follow the Americans and ban it?
Well, they've passed the bill in their House of Representatives. It's not yet law. I assume it'll have to get through the Senate and then be approved by their president. But TikTok's a worry, isn't it, because of the Chinese influence? I would have thought it deserved banning the moment we found out the Chinese were mining it for personal information and for political purposes. Why has it got to be effectively controlled by the Chinese government? I think who would allow that to happen in their country? So there's enough platforms out there for people to have their fun and their information and their entertainment without us being exposed to the Chinese government knowing about our personal movements, thoughts, political views, and other matters. I've never used TikTok for that reason, that I don't want some galahs in Beijing monitoring, mining my information. And if not a ban, then I think, you know, a citizen boycott of it would make a lot of sense.
See, that's interesting. I use social media as a trawling exercise. I like to see what people are posting, what the latest trends are, to get an idea about technology, to get an idea about what might break in news, et cetera. So I use it as a work tool, basically. But for politicians like yourself, what social media are you on and what do you use it for?
Well, basically what you said and getting my message across as best I can, Instagram, which has got limited reach, you know, as I move around, some photos there, not a lot. Facebook, which I find the best forum. I've got many more followers there on Facebook to put up political information, my speeches in Parliament, let people know what I'm doing on their behalf, and a little bit on Twitter, which gets me in more trouble than the other platforms. But, you know, if you've got strong views and there's plenty of snowflakes out there, that's the cost of doing business.
That is, just stay there, Mark. I've got Glenn the Truckee on our talkback lines. He wants to talk about this religious reform that has been shelved today. Go ahead, Glenn.
Right, it's just another example of the political elite trying to completely dismantle Christianity in this country. Where's the Australian people's right to choose to send their kids to school where they're not going to be indoctrinated with all this gender fluidity garbage?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And what about the paradox that our most successful popular schools are the ones that are being attacked by this proposal? What about the government schools where the results have been going backwards, the parents have got little faith in them, and they're losing student numbers and share? Wouldn't you have a focus on what's gone wrong in teaching in government schools, in the classroom, the curriculum, this lack of discipline? I mean, you know, these schools are a bit of a jungle in some instances. Why don't we put the spotlight on the government schools that are failing their students instead of the non-government schools that have been quite a success by comparison?
I wish we really would, Mark, because, well, I know for a fact a Queensland school, the teachers put out a calendar of themselves in bondage and in dressed up as nuns and all sorts of garbage, and they actually allowed their Year 12 students to see that. Then you've got just all of this gender fluidity and trans garbage that's been rammed down our kids' throats, and then we wonder why they're going off the rails. And let's not forget, New South Wales is looking at this anti-conversion law, correct, Mark?
Yeah, it's introduced in the Parliament today, and there's been a vote already on whether it had a committee inquiry. The left-wing MLCs voted that down, so no inquiry. They just want to ram it through, and it'll be debated more fully here on Thursday. So, yeah, all the points you've made are completely valid, spot on.
Bill, can you correct me if I'm wrong, Mark, but my biggest fear is it's going to be along the lines of Victoria. Now, in Victoria, once the public-funded government teachers completely mess your children up and your kids come home and want to go down this mutilation path, either by puberty blockers or the knife, if you as a parent complain in Victoria, you face up to 10 years jail. Is it going to be the same for the poor souls there in New South Wales?
No. Thankfully, the legislation here is not as extreme as the Victorian model, and there are exemptions for parents, medicos and religious practice. So in terms of, you know, this all started with the idea of banning gay conversion practices. But they went out in the 1970s with flares and cardigans. the bill is kind of about nothing other than the transgender examples where, you know, instead of banning the so-called conversion practices, we should follow the practice of the United Kingdom where they banned the puberty blockers and closed down centres like the Tavistock Gender Conversion Centre for under 18-year-olds. So, yep. You know, we've got the wrong band here in New South Wales, but no, there are exemptions for parents. And the bill, thankfully, is not as extreme as the lunacy in Victoria.
Well, that's good to hear. And I agree with you. We should be jumping all over these public schools because they're useless and they're filled with activists. And I'm glad to hear that as far as that goes. But all of this problem started, Mark, and I warned about it when we went down this gay marriage track. I said we were going to open up Pandora's box and it'll bite us on the arse. And have a look at where we're at now, mate. We have failed our children. The Australian society has failed our children on every single level. And then we sit back and go, oh, why are our kids so out of control? Breaking into homes and doing all of this stuff. Well, we've taken away all hope from our children. There's no accountability. There's no hope for a future. There's not even a hope to buy your own home in this country anymore. When are the people that we pay to run the country going to be held accountable for what they're doing to our kids?
Well, you've identified one problem, that the left-wing political agenda is never-ending. You know, they can get through same-sex marriage, okay, fair enough. But then they move on to their next demand, which is, in this case, to end the discrimination exemptions for non-government schools, to basically make religious schools non-religious. So, Mark, this is the problem, that these people can never stop.
Mark, I'm a survivor of pedophilia, right? And it messed my life up and I lived a very, very violent life until my wife came along and straightened me out. But here's the thing. We've now got books in public libraries promoting pedophilia to our children. Where's the coppers? Where's the politicians? Like, that just completely guts me. Genderqueer, the book's called, look it up. Promoting pedophilia to our children. And me as a survivor, I've got to sit here and not go absolutely postal on these bastards.
Yeah, I could imagine why you would want to go postal. I think that's a book worth checking up and see whether it is distributed as widely as Glenn's indicating. Glenn, thank you very much for your call. I've got to let Mark Latham go because he's got other more important business to get to. Mark, thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thanks very much, Chris.
Good on you, mate. Mark Latham, the independent MLC in the New South Wales Upper House. And it's good to have him on the program. Jason has written back another email here just quickly. I think everyone should watch this documentary on Netflix, he says. The Bomb and the Cold War. How close we were to nuclear war then and even now. Well, as we discussed in the program yesterday, don't tell me what we're doing to prod the bear in the Kremlin is anything but a major step towards a third world war. Let's take a break. Happy to take your calls and hear what you've got to say. And you can do that on our talkback lines. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
As a combat wounded veteran, I know how hard it is to come home and build a meaningful life. When I was in Iraq, our vehicle was hit. A rocket propelled grenade exploded right under my seat. Traumatic brain injury, a fractured pelvis, severe burns. They didn't think I was going to make it. I had to learn to walk again and live with the scars, both visible and invisible.
DAV helps veterans like Latoya get the benefits they've earned. They help more than a million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
With DAV on my side, I was able to pursue my dreams. If my story can touch a heart, it can change a life. My victory is overcoming my wounds so I can help other veterans.
Latoya Lucas, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Right, I've got cancer. I've been trying to tell the rest of you, but no one's listening. And I don't just mean you, ears, eyes. Would you look in the damn toilet for once? Hands, roll those sleeves and take a sample. And legs, trot off to the doctor to get me looked at. Because bowel cancer can be successfully treated when detected early. Now look who's finally woken up.
The voice of a changing world, Chris Smith, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, now let's talk racism for a short time because there's been a major police raid in the Northern Territory today. The Northern Territory's Independent Commissioner Against Corruption has seized computers from the top end's most elite police unit as it probes racism allegations from former Alice Springs officer Zachary Rolfe. Now, the Northern Territory government has confirmed its tactical response group is being investigated by ICAC over shocking claims that its officers had an in-house award known as Coon of the Year for lack of hygiene and poor performance. On Monday, Northern Territory Coroner Elizabeth Armitage released three of the purported awards. One was printed over the likeness of an Aboriginal flag with what appears to be dot paintings as a border. The Australian newspaper has been told a private investigator has been working for Mr. Rolfe to take statements from former TRG members, that's Tactical Response Group members, who either know about the awards or received one. I think the whole drama here is about to be up well and truly. ICAC is looking for evidence the awards were created on police computers, and if so, by which officers? The Australian newspaper has been told ICAC is also examining whether anything has been deleted from computers recently and by whom. That question in particular is worth asking. Northern Territory police are cooperating with ICAC's investigation of the TRG. The Australian has been told the inquiry is separate from that of police culture that is being led by Northern Territory Police Assistant Commissioner Martin Dole as a direct result of Mr. Rolfe's broader allegations in the witness box last month. Northern Territory Coroner Elizabeth Armitage yesterday lifted a suppression order on those three documents that purport to be in-house police awards for lack of hygiene and poor practice, including the Nagadar Award printed over the likeness of an Aboriginal flag. Mr. Rolfe was giving evidence of the impact of Kamanaji Walker last month when he told Judge Armitage that the awards existed and that they were known as the Coon of the Year Awards for officers exhibiting the most coon-like behaviour. Yeah, it's all about to come to a nasty conclusion by the sound of it. You wouldn't have expected that they would get away with it. You wouldn't have expected at this stage that they could possibly get away with it. Now, from racism to the future of the Liberal Party in Australia. And I noticed that Peter Dutton has had some words today to say to his caucus, in which he mentioned that he sees that the party, the Liberal Party, will no longer be a Labor light party. And when you consider what the Liberal Party became under the likes of Malcolm Turnbull, and to a certain degree under Scott Morrison, is it any wonder that we would have a situation where the Liberal Party would be accused of being Labor light? They were accused of being Labor light on a number of occasions, but apparently in the caucus today, early today, he made the point that Liberal Party will not be Labor light under him. And I think that's fair to say, knowing Peter Dutton the way I do. He is a conservative through and through. And although he was tippy-toeing through The Voice before the referendum, I have a feeling that he'll be a lot more like Tony Abbott than he'll be like Malcolm Turnbull or Scott Morrison. But he had that to say today to those in the caucus room. All right, the ABC. All the usual suspects today. The Ukrainian ambassador to Australia has demanded a meeting with ABC management over the airing of a Four Corners episode on Monday night that, according to the show's website, quote, offered a human perspective on life on the Russian front line. Now, I'm tending to support what the ABC has done here, which is not like me. But if they are offering a perspective on life at the Russian front line, who's to say that they're telling porkies? Who's to say that that is not a worthy story to cover, especially when you're dealing with human lives? We're not dealing with the Russian government. You're dealing with human lives. They count whether they're Russian or whether they're Ukrainian. Ukrainian ambassador released an extraordinary statement this morning, slamming the program's, quote, propaganda narratives emanating from the Kremlin, publicly requesting an audience with ABC boss David Anderson and the executive producer of Four Corners, Matthew Carney. The program aired last night on Four Corners. It was the journalistic equivalent, he said, of a bowl of vomit. This is what he put in the statement. It was journalistic equivalent of a bowl of vomit. It unquestionably repeated and aired countless blatant lies, historical distortions, racist claims, and propaganda narratives emanating from the Kremlin. Inasmuch it completely served the interests of Russia's dictator Putin, as if the ABC story on Four Corners on a Monday night will have any bearing on anyone, on anything. Who cares? Anyway, he's talking about how it minimalised and denigrated the deaths of thousands of innocent Ukrainian men, women and children who've been killed by Russian soldiers in an illegal and brutal invasion strongly condemned by Australia and the majority of countries through the UNGA resolution of March 2022. The Australian Broadcasting Corporation should be ashamed that it put such total garbage to air. Through the Minister for Communications, I will ask for a meeting with the Managing Director of the ABC and the Executive Producer of Four Corners to understand what process led to the airing of this pro-Putin and pro-violence propaganda piece by Australia's national broadcaster. I will share with them the facts that the program totally disregarded. That's interesting. I have met the Ukrainian ambassador. I've interviewed him half a dozen times. I find him to be quite astute, very loyal to Vladimir Zelensky, very loyal to the government. But at the same time, if he thinks that there were lies told in that documentary, he has every right to call it out, to protest about it, and even seek some kind of recourse. Now, I don't know whether the ABC is very attuned to saying sorry. Not in my time, knowing the media the way I do. But you never know. If they've been factual, well, he's got no leg to stand on. And I would have thought telling the story through the eyes of those on the Russian side of the border is completely within the remit of the Four Corners program. Maybe you'd like to comment on some of that. Give us a call on those talkback numbers. Let's get to some news for you. We'll come back after the news and we'll catch up with a fellow who's dedicated his life to gauging the mood of the nation. All coming up in the program next hour, right here on TNT.